Hi, this is Danielle from The Jealous Curator, and this is episode 58 of Art for Your Ear. This episode is supported by Saatchi Art, the world's largest curated online gallery offering original art by independent artists from around the world. So, today is all about weaving and nude selfies. Yep, I'm finally going to get to ask Erin M. Riley all about her amazing, detailed, slightly uncomfortable slash sexy tapestries. I literally know nothing about Erin's story, and I am just so excited to find out. Ready? Calling Brooklyn. Hello?
Hello.
Hi, Erin. This is very exciting.
Yes.
I'm kind of nervous.
Me too. This is very surreal.
Really?
Yeah, because I've listened to this, like, intro so many times. Even the Skype intro, like, that bubbling noise.
Yeah.
It's all you. It's good. I love it.
Well, I'm nervous to ask you about your work.
Oh, I know.
It's kind of sexy and scandalous.
Yeah, I know. I don't know. We don't have to go there.
Yeah, we do. We totally do. I'm super excited to hear. I mean, I've loved your work for so long, so I have a lot of questions for you.
Okay.
I'm just going to start.
Okay. Let's do it.
Okay. First of all, I don't know anything about you, except that I've loved your work for a really long time. Yeah. So you live in Brooklyn right now.
Yeah.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up on Cape Cod.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah, so, but everybody knows Cape Cod is like the sides where it meets the ocean, but there's like all these people who live in the middle and it's not so beautiful.
Oh.
But we try to get to the beach, but then all the rich people like block you out and it's really hard. So,
oh, fair enough.
Now growing up, it's like fun to go back, but it wasn't like vacation-y and scenery as it was, as people imagine it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I totally get that. I grew up in like a, I've moved back here now, but a, you know, beach town kind of thing.
Yeah.
But our house faced the highway.
Right. Yeah.
But when we moved back a couple of years ago, and I said to my husband, I just want to be able to see the lake. Even if it's like a sliver out of one window and you have to push your face up against the, I just want to be able to see the lake because I grew up here looking at the highway.
Right.
Yeah. So we can see the lake. So I'm all good.
That's awesome. Yeah. Water is something that to this day, just seeing water calms me.
Yeah.
I hate being landlocked.
Yeah. So. Me too. And so when did you move to New York?
Pretty recently. I went to school in Boston and then moved directly to grad school in Philly.
Mm.
And then I did residencies for like a couple years around the United States. And then kind of found my way to New York in 2013.
Okay, yeah, so pretty recent. Where did you go to school in Philly?
I went to Tyler School of Art.
Oh, did you ever come across Martha Rich? She teaches there, but probably not what you were taking. Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, so I always do this. Let's go right back. So when you were in Cape Cod, not loving, because you weren't on the beach, did you make art as a kid?
Kind of. I kind of was. Like, I, like, played with fire. I, like, made forts. I had a tendency to want to, like, do stuff, but I didn't really know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
I would, like, melt a candle into another jar and then melt that into another jar. Kind of weird things, you know? But considering, like, what I do now, which is just obsessive weaving, it's like it kind of makes sense.
I love that.
Yeah, but then I learned sewing. Luckily, my school, sixth grade, had sewing in home ec. So I was like 8 or 9 and got a sewing machine for the first time. And pretty much I shared a room with my little sister and she would have to sleep on the couch when I would sew, like into the night.
Wow. And what did you sew? Like clothes or stuff or toys or what did you make?
I made clothes, a lot of clothes,
mm-hmm.
And a lot of quilts.
Oh.
A lot of bad clothes, like clothes that never fit me, but you know, they were fun to make.
Yeah.
But then you learned kind of how to make clothes that fit you. So
that's cool. I did the same thing.
Yeah.
My mom had a sewing machine, and yeah, and I'd get patterns, and around the same age, I was making like little, I made terry cloth shorts and a shirt, pink terry cloth. But I used to make like little stuffy animals too, you know, and oh, my poor family, I would make them as gifts, and they're probably like, oh, thanks. This is weird little creature.
Those are fun. And then you turn them all inside out.
Great. Yeah. Button eyes.
Yeah.
And so when did your tapestry thing, was that in school? Was that before university or how?
School.
Okay.
Yeah. So I went to art school thinking I would be a painting major because that was like all I really knew. But I also loved fashion and sewing. But then once I got to school and got situated with what a fashion design degree actually is, it's like less sewing and more like business. So I was like kind of turned off by that. So I found fibers, which I never heard of before, and there are all these looms. So my first semester freshman year, when I could take an elective, I took weaving. And then I just never really, I did not take weaving for the rest of my college.
Wow.
Yeah, it was awesome.
That's amazing that your college had that.
Yeah, yeah. Mass Art is one of the oldest public school or public art schools in the country.
Mm.
They built it to teach teachers how to teach art. And it's the loom room, the old fiber head was very like territorial and kept a lot of space over the years. So there's a massive loom room. So it's awesome.
Loom room. That sounds like heaven.
Yeah, it was amazing.
And so by the time you were in your last year, is that mainly all you were doing?
Yeah, I was just weaving. I was doing a lot of like mixed media kind of. My work, because tapestry is such like a skill, basically you have to build it up. And so there was a point when I couldn't get the details I wanted. So I was collaging photographs into my tapestries using like polyurethane and resin and all of these different things. But those were having technical issues, like they were dissolving wool and it was kind of cool, but it was definitely like not planned.
Mm-hmm.
And then so through grad school, I kind of just worked harder on making tapestries and developing my skill.
Wow, so cool.
Yeah.
They're so beautiful and they are so detailed. Like, I can't even imagine, how long does a piece take you? I mean, I know there are different sizes, but like say a big one.
Yeah, the strange thing about me, so most tapestry weavers don't weave on a loom situated the way I do. Some do. There are like a lot of well-known weavers who weave the same way I do, but traditionally speaking, it's a much slower process. So I weave on a loom that kind of helps me out as far as lifting. So I weave like a 8-foot by 8-foot piece in about a month.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's quick. I mean, compared to some people weave that in, you know, a year.
Right. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
And I have so many process questions for you, but I feel like I'm getting ahead of myself. Okay. So when you were in grad school then, did you pick that school specifically because they had a good fiber program?
I wanted access to looms, and then but Tyler School of Art offered me an assistantship, so that was like I was torn between Cranbrook and Tyler School of Art, and Tyler called me up and was like, we want to give you an assistantship, so it kind of sealed the deal for me.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah. So it was just me in that year for the fibers. So I was on my own, which is kind of how I've always been. But it was more self-directed. So it was good.
And so were you doing the kind of work that you're doing now at grad school, like subject matter wise?
It was more family. Mm-hmm. Like, I had a lot of pushback in grad school because people were really tired of hearing my story, which was, like, kind of annoying.
What's your story? I don't know it.
Well, basically, like, at the time, my family was going through a lot. My sisters were, like, deep in – one of my sisters was using heroin at the time. So I was in grad school making art and getting updates from back home, kind of like as to if she was okay, if she was, you know, like back in rehab, or if just like all of these things. So I was starting to make work about that, and people were very detached about that, you know, like they didn't care.
Wow, and that's you know, weird.
Yeah, it was the program, especially like in painting, sculpture, was very conceptual and intellectual.
Mm.
So, and that's not the work I'm very like drawn to anyways. So obviously I didn't connect with those artists. But yeah, there was a point when they were like, let's just stop talking about your family. And I was like, well, that's what I make work about. So,
that is crazy to me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like literally crazy to me. That's how I felt in university too. It was very conceptual school that I went to, and I was not that kind of person. I'm still not.
Yeah.
And I really, really struggled. And then, yeah, when I would try to make work about what was actually happening in my life.
Yeah.
You know, and also I was really young. I was 19 or 20. So you can only draw on so much.
Mm-hmm.
But you'd think that drawing on the fact that your sister's going through this horrible, yeah, insane thing would work for them.
Right. Yeah, it was.
Wow, that's painful.
Yeah, it was hard because, yeah, I was trying to, like, engage in this program that I had. It was a great opportunity, but then also, like, I was young, too, so I went to grad school when I was 21.
Mm.
So not only was I the young person, but I was also, like, the emotional person. So, yeah.
And so did you just keep going anyway and just do your own thing?
Yeah, like my grad show was about my stepdad, or kind of like my relationship to my stepdad. And through the whole crit of that, everyone was like trying to make it more conceptual and more kind of installation based or more complicated. And I was just like, you know, I just wanted to make things that hung on a wall. And they weren't very happy about that, but, you know, whatever.
I totally know what you're saying. Yep.
Yeah.
That's so frustrating. Well, good for you to, you know, that you just kept on going. And obviously, I mean, that's what art is for, right? For you to express, in a way, what is in your head.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's been, since I was younger, like, basically, I kept a diary throughout my whole childhood. And then there was a point when my mom read my diaries, and so I had to figure out a way to keep a diary but not say things.
Mm-hmm.
So I started collaging, and I started coding my words and basically keeping sketchbooks. So I moved away from text, and I moved into visuals, and it's always been this kind of outlet for me to like stay sane, basically.
Mm-hmm. Can I ask how your sister is now?
Oh, she's good. They're both of my sisters went down bad roads. Cape Cod is kind of riddled with heroin right now.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it's like a huge epidemic. So they both went down bad situations, and they're both sober now. So,
That's good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
That's crazy. And so, yeah, you're at school. This is all going on.
Yeah.
And so what did you do when you graduated? Where did you go? You did residencies after that.
Yeah. So I stayed in Philly. I it's super affordable there. So I stayed, worked at like Whole Foods, worked at bars, kind of just kept a studio space. And
so I guess you had to have your own looms and everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got a loom through school. There was people donating all the time. So.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, it was awesome to get something through them. But yeah, I started applying to residencies because I felt like I wanted more opportunities to make work. And that seemed like the best way to do it. So I did that for like 3 years. I went to 7 residencies over the next 3 years.
Wow, all around the U.S.?
Yeah, mostly like Midwest and East Coast.
Mm.
Yeah.
And so did you love it? Did you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's my dream. I just think just to have that concentrated time.
Yeah.
And so yeah. Did your work change during that time?
Yeah, I think that's kind of how my work became so personal and so like body-based, because I was in a lot of long-distance relationships. And I was traveling all the time, so I was alone a lot. And kind of taking pictures of myself to either connect with people on Instagram or connect with people in relationships. So I was, like, reflecting on my body a lot
mm-hmm.
at that time. So I started kind of delving deeper into self-portraits around then.
Well, they're so beautiful. It's just... The first time I saw your work was a couple of years ago, yeah. And I just remember being like they just took my breath away. Like, I love, like, the found images and stuff, the, you know, the things that you were finding on Facebook and things of girls in situations that they probably shouldn't have been in.
Yeah.
Done in a tapestry.
Yeah.
And so putting those two things together, it's sort of like this very traditional, you know, weaving mixed with this very, very new, you know, image making kind of thing, you know, that, you know, so many people are doing. How did that kind of come together? Like, outside of the self-portrait stuff, what about the images that you were finding?
Well, so when I was first doing tapestry, I like started using childhood photographs. So I was using all this stuff that I had. And then when I went to grad school, my mom mailed me some more stuff, but then I ended up running out.
Mm-hmm.
And I ended up going online and kind of searching for imagery that related to what I was thinking about. And I was doing a lot of drunk driving related work.
Yeah, there's a whole series of car crashes, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So doing a lot of that. And then I was thinking about, like what leads to people engaging in risky behavior, or especially women kind of engaging in a culture that, like, is self-destructive, kind mm-hmm. of. And then I was reading about, like, daddy issues and self-esteem and how these things are built, and kind of reflecting on my judgments of other women and like my opinions that were based off of my insecurities, basically. I was dating this guy who was really like obsessed with this woman on Twitter, and I was very intimidated by it, by the whole thing. And because she was a beautiful woman, her Twitter was basically images of her constantly. But the more I realized it, like, the more I looked at her, the less powerful she became, you know, like her body. It's just a body. It's really just an image of a body. He didn't know her. It wasn't something that was, they were meeting in real life. So it was his projections of who she was and, you know, everything that went along with that. So I kind of allowed her to like lose the power that she was having over me as far as insecurities and feeling inept. And then I just kind of saw her as just this woman who, you know, takes pictures of her body, and it wasn't that overwhelming anymore.
Mm.
So I used one of her images, and then I started to realize that like we're all kind of like trying to connect to each other, you know, like especially through the internet, like everyone's just grasping at each other, mm-hmm. like trying to connect, trying to like tell each other we're real and we're, you know, we have feelings and we're sensitive and all of these things. So I was just like so curious of the idea that like we're all taking pictures of ourselves and just putting them online. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. I know that it is weird.
Yeah. Yeah.
It, when you think about it, you know, and that's why I think it's so cool when you're combining it with this very, very old way of creating art, right? Yeah. This tapestry, yeah, with this very new thing that people don't even really know sometimes the repercussions, especially young girls, right?
Right.
All of my high school friends, they're all teachers.
Yeah.
And they're just like, some of these girls, things that they're posting, it's just like, you don't understand, like, this isn't going away.
Right, right.
You know, when you put this up, like, it gets spread around and you can't just take it away. What did your boyfriend, were you still with him when you did the piece with that?
Yeah.
What did he think of it?
I don't think he had any opinions. Like, at that point in time, my art life and my like real life was kind of pretty separate because those were still long distance relationships. So it wasn't like he was going to my art shows or seeing the work in real life. It was, and I don't really think I had, yeah, I didn't have Instagram back then. So I didn't like, I wasn't really posting my work besides my website.
Right.
So.
And did that did make, like, so how big was that piece?
It was like 36. I did a whole series of these girls that I found for the show called Daddy Issues. And it was like 36 by 24 and just like a bunch of found imagery of girls like in wet t-shirt contests and in dorm rooms and just like being crazy.
That's when I first found you. That's the first post I wrote about. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so when you're working on those, because, you know, if they take a month or however long, when you're working on them, do you just kind of zone out and it's just sort of you're making, or are you thinking about stuff while you're doing it, or what's going through your head over that amount of time?
It's kind of like a mix between it all. Like, I try not to think too much. I try to like listen to podcasts, watch Netflix, do all these things because sometimes my work is a little bit too serious.
Mm.
But yeah, during that time I was trying to like learn about feminism and learn about my ideas as far as like the victimology of women. Like the idea that like an image of our body can be used against us to such degree, you know, like,
mm-hmm.
where does that come from? And just the fact that like other women are shaming each other for things that we all do.
I wanted to ask you about that because that first series that I, you know, the Daddy Issues one, it's girls making pretty bad decisions.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You found those pictures online. So there's another bad decision because now it's up online, right? But then at the same time, you have some really beautiful self-portraits of yourself. And so this is why I was nervous to talk to you because I was like, okay, so it's kind of this combination, right, of you want to be empowered in your own body.
Right.
And be able to document yourself if you want to.
Right.
But then also this fine line of, you know, like, the bad decision part. And so I just wanted to ask you about that evolution.
Yeah, so I never drank. I didn't ever do that in college. where I grew up, like, having a designated driver was important. Mm-hmm. So I never drank, so observing drinking behavior was, like, super fascinating to me. And, yeah, so I was really concerned about a lot of these girls and a little bit judgy because I was like, you know, like, they shouldn't be doing this. They're putting themselves in really dangerous positions, like blood alcohol, things, you know, beyond just waking up on a sidewalk, like, you know, blacking out and doing all these things that are really bad for your body. But, like, for me, I was kind of trying to understand how my sisters went from being just the girl at the party who drank a lot to the girl who went to rehab. So for me, like, I was always worst case scenario, and I was trying to kind of reflect on the idea that, like, a lot of young adults go through this phase and they turn out okay. And I was trying to, like, be okay with that, basically. Mm-hmm. But there's like, consent issues, like, who's taking the pictures, and then who's posting the pictures. So the pictures made me uncomfortable, and I wanted other people, like, an image posted on Facebook, and then just that goes to the bottom of the image file because you post 30 more the next day and then 30 more the next day. Like, I wanted to kind of have someone see an image that they might have posted in the, you know, the glee or the fun of that night and then see it out of context and sort of, like, reflect on their behavior. Mm-hmm. And the fact that, like, other people are seeing this. Yeah, I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the thing. They are very uncomfortable. Like, they're beautifully done, but it's very, like, oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's, like, it's just fascinating.
Mm-hmm. It is. It's a weird time right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I love that you're documenting it.
Yeah.
In such a special, skillful way.
Yeah, I think I'm kind of like hoping for the best, thinking the worst, hoping for the best. You know, these are just snapshots of a night, you know, and everybody's okay.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad Facebook wasn't around when I was a teenager. I'll tell you that right now.
I know.
Yeah, it is. Well, you know, one of my friends works at a high school, and she said that they had a guy come and talk to the whole school about all of this stuff and said, you know, if you send a photo of yourself to your boyfriend, he might be, you know, trustworthy and loving and whatever, but, like, high school relationships will last 3 months. And
right.
The minute it's over, you don't think he's going to forward that to everyone he knows?
I know.
And then he said, you know, if that's ever happened, if your girlfriend has taken a picture of herself and you have forwarded it to your friends, you can be charged with possession of child pornography and distributing child pornography. And my friend said you could just see, like, three quarters of the kids' faces just drop. It's just like, what? You know, and he, like, laid it all out for them. And she said they were terrified. And then she said about a week later, they were just back to normal.
Yeah.
And so she said it's just so interesting. And she teaches in an alternate school. So she's got some of the kids that are, like, you know, not from the greatest homes and going through some pretty tough stuff. And so she's like, the things that you see and the decisions that they're making. And, you know, at that age, you don't make great decisions.
No. Yeah.
And so, yeah, and then you add cameras to it and the World Wide Web, and it's just like, oh, my God. And then so how did you start? So there was that, and then you started doing self-portraits after that, right? Or were you doing self-portraits at the same time?
I was doing, like, all these girl pieces, and then people were kind of coming at me and saying, like, I was exploiting women.
Really?
Yeah. So... And, you know, I had to step back from my work and say, like, oh, yeah, like, I am using images that aren't mine. I'm changing them to a degree, but like I'm not really, I'm representing women that aren't me, but I was thinking of them as like kind of self-portraits and, or as like stand-ins of myself. So I was getting a lot of that pushback. So I started saying like, okay, then now I'm going to start using myself, basically.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I mean, it was.
How did you feel when that was happening? Did you feel, were you upset or defensive or just sort of like, oh yeah, I can see that.
I was definitely like conflicted, you know, cause I didn't think that that's what I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
I was like,
really? I wouldn't think that that was what you were doing either.
Yeah. I mean, I knew my intentions, but clearly like the viewer didn't. So
who were the people saying that? Like people online or?
Yeah, people online.
Yeah, all stupid people online.
Yeah, yeah. So I was really upset because that wasn't my intention. And then, you know, you're outside of grad school, you're outside of this critique setting, so you don't really get all that much input. And then you realize, like, oh my gosh, like, the work I'm making is coming from this, like, really, like, concerning and, like, self-reflective point of view, and no one gets that. So I had to put myself in it,
mm-hmm.
to kind of like prove everyone wrong, you know, prove everyone that like I'm trying to make work about women, not just like other women.
Yeah. And you're not judging them. You're, yeah, yeah. And so how did it feel? Okay. First of all, are you represented by a gallery?
No.
Oh, I'm surprised.
Yeah. I've jumped around.
Okay, because what were galleries saying about your work? Did they ever say anything like that?
No,
I wouldn't think so. Yeah, so, oh, stupid internet trolls. Well, yeah. I mean, in a way, I mean, it's cool because your self-portraits are amazing and it made you reflect and, like, evolve, which is kind of good. But so how did it feel when you started putting yourself, did it feel natural or did it feel kind of odd to have yourself in there?
It all kind of came about. It was this summer I was home from a residency, so I was living in my studio. So I was like, I wasn't allowed to be doing that, but I was like living in my studio, showering at Planet Fitness. It was like the summer, so it was super hot.
Was this in New York?
It was in Philly.
Oh, in Philly. Okay.
Yeah. So I was basically like, just like, I don't know. My body was very much there. You know, I was sweating. I was just like, I was very present in my body. So I started taking all these pictures, kind of trying to recreate pictures that like partners might ask for.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of recreated like a whole scenario of sexting, basically, like from wearing full clothes to what they might ask for along the way.
Mm-hmm.
To being nude. So I took a bunch of photos and then I started weaving those because I wanted them to reflect like the webcam kind of selfie experience.
Mm-hmm.
So making those was kind of, it felt a little bit crazy. like I was pretty scared and I ended up destroying a few of them. No one ever saw a few of them. So,
wow.
But they were good because, you know, I was putting myself in positions that I was using other women's bodies in and really kind of coming to terms with my body, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I was getting much more comfortable in my skin and I don't know. It was fun. It was like people kind of looked at my work a little bit more seriously than.
Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah.
And you must have like, what did it change your view of the women whose images you'd used before? Like, cause you must've felt really vulnerable.
Yeah.
And then in a way it's like, wow, they must, you know, same thing. Like they're just as vulnerable.
Yeah. Yeah. And also kind of, like in charge.
Right.
I like, I'd always sent pictures throughout the years I was making these things, but kind of never really copying to that. And because sex is such a shameful thing for women, you know, like, we want to be respected, we want to be taken seriously, but there are points in our life when we want to be sexy.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes being a smart, challenging, like, responsible, like, woman is conflicting with that. And so, like, I wanted to, like, rather than say, like, either or, I wanted to just, like, add that, you know, like,
mm-hmm.
I'm worried about all the same things, but I also sometimes just want to be sexy and lusted after, you know.
Mm-hmm. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
You know, and that's like all the stuff that's going around now about, you know, with all that stuff that happened with that dude and the swimmer guy. And it's just like, oh, you know, girls, if you wear a short skirt, you're asking for it and stuff like that. And it's like, well, you should be able to do whatever you like. It's your body.
Right.
Be sexy if you want to. It doesn't give people permission to do whatever they like.
Yeah.
And so it is this really weird dichotomy, really, of like being empowered.
Right.
And being like, this is my body. I'll show it the way I want to. I'll, you know, be sexy if I want to. But then at the same time, it's like, are you now at risk?
Right. Yeah.
And it's not really fair, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's interesting to me because, like, I know I observed this with my little sister. There was an age, like, we all go through puberty and we develop an adult body, but we don't know what it's like to, like, you know, you're not sexually active, so you don't know what the opposite sex is thinking necessarily when
right.
they're catcalling you when you're 15 or when you're, like, you have cleavage, but, like, and everybody's looking, but you're just like, these are just here. So I think there's this point when we have this body and then we realize, like, oh, I'm a sexual object now. And that's scary, but mm-hmm. I don't think it needs to be scary. Like, I think society, like, can make it this kind of great thing, you know, like, it doesn't, we don't have to be at risk for sexual assault the minute we go to college, you know, like, I don't think that needs to be something that's just part of society,
mm-hmm.
which is what I was kind of ingrained with when I was, like, getting out of high school and moving to Boston and being like, okay, I'm going to college, like, the likelihood of me being sexually assaulted is, you know, 20 times higher now, which is an insane thing to think about when you're, like, 17 years old.
Yeah.
We
were all given a rape whistle when we got to university.
Yeah. It's so crazy.
Yeah.
But it's just part of being a woman. And it's, like, I kind of want to, I don't know, it would be amazing to not have to deal with that.
Yeah, right?
I don't know. It's hard.
That's why I think your work is just so important and beautiful and, that's why I wanted to talk to you about all of this, because it's such a bigger issue. And I love that you are, you know, you've been true to yourself this whole time and you've kind of shone a light on this thing through, but, you know, while kind of exploring your own stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. I've definitely changed, you know, over the years, like, you know, while I was, like, talking about all of these things, I was still kind of, you know, there's all of these issues around women, like the orgasm gap. There are all these things as far as, like, women existing in society and never getting pleasure, you know, never knowing how to get pleasure or
that they're allowed to ask for it.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. To advocate for themselves. And so I, you know, slowly but surely, my work and the things that I'm talking about, my work is seeping into my real life, but, like, it really takes time. You know, it's like we are really trained to be submissive and, like, you know, please the man first or please our partner first. And
good girls wouldn't do that.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So I'm trying to like do as much empowering for myself, because that's something, you know,
mm-hmm.
I don't know. So
it's so good. Yeah. And you are, it's just so good. So what are you working on now? Are you still doing self-portraits? The tattoo yeah. ones are gorgeous. Are yeah. those really your tattoos?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, so I love those so much. And when I realized they were self-portraits, I was just like, oh my God, even better.
Yeah. So I wanted kind of a way to differentiate myself from everyone else in my work. So I started putting my tattoos on them. And so, yeah, I'm doing a lot more self-portraits, actually. Like, I'm trying to recreate scenes from my past and the not-so-sexy scenes. Like, I just did some pieces about, like, grooming, like, shaving and tweezing.
I saw the shaving one, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So that's kind of fun, trying to, like, show the body in a more challenging way, basically.
Mm-hmm. Instead of just, yeah, yeah.
Just posed or yeah. just flattering. Like, it's really hard to, like, accept, like, a non-flattering photo of yourself.
And oh, then kidding, just, and then weave it for a month?
Yeah, yeah. So I'm working on it, yeah.
Okay, here's a process question. So when you're working on it, can you, okay, first of all, do you just work from the photo or do you have to plan a sketch first?
Yeah, I plan a whole sketch.
Okay.
So I blow it up. Like, sometimes I do like photo collages in Photoshop and then blow that up with the printer, like just like, you know, crappy black and white printing.
Mm-hmm.
And then I draw that out. Like, I draw in details on that.
And then is that how you plan your colors and stuff like that?
Yeah, yeah. And then sometimes I just use an overhead projector and a tracing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so it's like a simple, pretty simple line drawing.
That you have then on there, and then you can go from there.
Yeah, it's pinned to the bottom of the piece.
Oh, okay.
And it's kind of on a scroll, so like once you roll it over, you can keep advancing it. So.
Wow.
Always underneath it.
And then, so if you make a mistake, do you just unweave that part?
Yeah. It's actually, like, really hard. Unless I, like, completely... There's actually a piece I just made, and I was trying... There's a lot of shadows in it, which I rarely ever do because shadows are really hard.
Mm-hmm.
And I told myself, like, don't make any shadow mistakes, and I made one. But I was like, it's kind of endearing, you know? It's like... It would have taken a full day to take it out, so I just left it in as like a quirk, you know.
And are you probably the only person that can tell?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
exactly. We'll see. Maybe someone will call it out, but I doubt
it. Is it on your site yet, that piece?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm going to go look and see. I bet I won't even be able to know which one it is. and so I can't believe you're not represented by a gallery. Do you want to be or do you not? Is that not what you want?
It's been very interesting. Like, money and art and business is really hard to
yeah.
deal with. I have had to, like, advocate for myself throughout the years, and I've yet to meet somebody who can, like, really... It's like relationships, they always say, you know, like, I've yet to meet a gallery that really treats me the way I want to be treated and who supports all my work rather than kind of, you know, keeping some of it in the back room and or not at all, you know. So
that totally surprises me.
Yeah, I've skipped out on a lot of opportunities simply because the gallery didn't have a great reputation, or simply because you know, I've had my peers say, like, oh, you could have made all this money or had a big show. But if it doesn't feel right, like, my work's really personal, so I don't really want to show it if it's not going to be considered.
Absolutely, because then it's just exploiting
I bet you it's probably for that, right? It's the sexy thing. Yeah. And then now it's like you're exploiting it for the wrong reasons. And
it's put down like a pigeonhole. So
yeah.
I am in talks with like a really great gallery here. And so we'll see what happens.
I hope that works. And then, so do you have a day job?
No.
You're just doing that.
Yeah, I quit. I was working at a bowling alley in Philly and quit to go to Vermont Studio Center. And then I went to Bemis and then I just kind of lived really, really, really cheaply for about 2 years. And, I still kind of have to hustle every now and then, but because I do direct sales or something, you know, like my work or my sales go farther because I'm not splitting with a gallery.
Yeah. Oh, so, good for you. And how are you doing that? Online or are you?
Yeah, online or through studio visits. I mean, I don't do that super often, but when I do, it's like, you know, I can live off that for a couple months. So it's good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, well, you're so talented. I'm so happy to talk to you now before you're super duper famous and have no time for me and I'd have to go through your agent and everything.
No.
That's why I had to scoop you now.
I'm control, so I don't know. We'll see what happens.
I know. I'm the same way. I'm such a control freak.
Yeah.
And I like to make my own decisions and yeah.
Like we could probably have, if we could just let go, we could probably have more opportunities, but I think I don't know. It's like, this is not like a tech startup or it's not like this thing that like I just invented. It's like, it's my whole life. So
yeah. I know you have to be able to sleep at night.
Yeah. Make decisions you like. So,
yeah. So good. Okay. Speed round. Are you ready?
Okay. Yeah, I'm ready.
Okay. Erin M. Riley. What does the M stand for?
Michelle.
That was going to be my guess.
Really? I was supposed to be Michael. I was supposed to be a boy. So they put Michelle.
That's so funny. And how is there another Erin Riley that's famous? How come you have your M in there? Oh, okay.
There's a bodybuilder. Yeah. So if you search Erin Riley on Tumblr, it's all bodybuilding pics. It's great.
Oh my gosh. You should weave that.
I know. I have some ideas. So we'll see what happens.
Oh my. A female bodybuilder?
Well, I'm like super fascinated by all of the situations on Instagram where people get shamed for very specific body parts. Like I found a woman whose nose gets shamed a lot. And then I found another woman whose arms, like she's just in shape, but like everybody hates on her arms.
What?
And so, yeah, I want to do a series of like body pieces where it's very specific body parts are kind of accentuated. So we'll see what happens.
Oh my word.
Yeah.
All those internet people again.
They really get in your head if you're looking.
Yeah, no kidding. I try and ignore them the best I can. okay. Oh, I always like this question because of coffee or tea?
Coffee. For sure.
Two. All day.
Yeah.
If you could watch one TV show all day long, what would it be? Do you binge watch anything?
Yeah, I would say like early Grey's Anatomy.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I like a good cry.
I was just going to say, I used to watch that when I was pregnant.
Yeah, and just cry.
Like sobbing.
Yeah.
Can't breathe crying. And then I finally just couldn't take it. When that guy's dog died and I just was like, okay, I'm out.
It's not bad. So it's like, I really find my emotions are not so regulated now that Grey's Anatomy isn't as good. Like I used to have a hearty cry every Thursday and now it's like not happening. So.
You got to get that estrogen out of you. That's so funny.
It gets pent up.
Oh my God. I know. I had to stop watching that. And then when I had my son, being a parent, it's like, I can't watch three quarters of the shows out there because I instantly put myself Like, you know that movie, Panic Room?
I don't know.
There's, I haven't watched it either. There, I think it's called Panic Room. Or The Room.
I can't watch, like, scary movies.
No. Well, this is like some woman and her son in this panic room because somebody's trying to kill them. And I have a son and I'm like, nope, can't watch that. So yeah, I get limited by a lot of things. But yes, good call. Old Grey's Anatomy. It was so, so good. But
good.
An emotional roller coaster.
Yeah, totally.
Okay, then the last question. What's your favorite tattoo on your body and your least, do you have any regretful tattoos?
Let's see. My favorite tattoo, I have a tweezers tattoo, which is, like, very personal. Probably that. I'm actually working on my back, which is this, which is the Diana the Huntress. So she's kind of a powerful lady, so that's a good one, too.
Wow.
Yeah.
Does it hurt?
Yeah, it hurts a lot.
So do you, because you've got lots, right?
Yeah, it's kind of cathartic. It's like, rather than go to therapy, I get a tattoo every 6 months. It's like regulating your emotions, too. It's like, you get to reacquaint yourself with pain and endurance, you know? Like, you get to tell yourself, like, I can't do this, and then you can. And then you're like, I can't do it anymore, and then you can. So, it's kind of like weaving, where I sit myself down and I'm like, this is going to be a really hard day and I don't know if I can make this happen. And I do. So, it's like constantly like little challenges.
And I assume you're such a very clearly thoughtful person and narrative person. So do all the tattoos mean something then?
Yeah, I'm kind of, I got a lot of them like traveling and, they do mean stuff. Sometimes they're like a little bit like whimsical, or like I bought a truck and I got a truck tattoo. So it's like very fun. You know?
Do you have any that you regret?
Not really.
And I guess you can always go over them creatively, right?
Yeah.
My husband, we'd been talking about getting one, kind of a matching one in a way, like a complimentary one for our 10-year wedding anniversary. Mm-hmm. And so he got this, it looks really cool actually, this big thick black band all the way around his bicep.
Oh,
and
cool.
Then in the middle, like sort of on the front of his arm, there's a X, a sort of a thick X knocked out of it for 10 years.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, which is really cool. And so the plan was I was going to get the X that had been knocked out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I didn't. And I was like, you know what? 29 hours of labor. That's what I did.
Right.
And exactly. An emergency C-section. So I have a giant scar. So I'm like, I'm good. I've already marked my body to show my love and commitment to this family. I'm out.
Yeah. You don't need it.
I don't need it. It's fine. No, he knew I was bailing before, but I didn't make him do it. And then I bailed. He knew I wasn't going to do it. But his is so, so cool. I really do like it. Yeah, it's very cool. And he's very particular. So, it took him a long time to find the right tattoo artist to make sure the lines were perfect. And yeah, anyway, it is very cool.
Yeah.
But I had a nose ring when I was 20 something. Mm-hmm. And after about a year and a half, I got tired of it and took it out. And then I got a belly ring. And then I had that for about a year and a half and got tired of it and took it out. And I thought, you know, I am not a candidate for a tattoo.
Well, when I was young, when I was like 6 or 7, I remember telling my mom, like, I'm going to have full sleeves and I'm going to have my whole body tattooed.
What did she say?
She was super against it and scary. So
what does she think now?
I mean, because it's gone, it's gotten to this, like, every time I got a new tattoo in college, she would yell at me. But I would just be like, whatever, you know, like, I'm paying for it. So, I mean, basically I paid for it with student loans, so now I'm screwed, but it happens, you know, what else are you going to do when you're 20? So,
I love it. Well, and now you've got subject matter.
Right. Now,
full circle. You're all good.
Yeah, it works out.
That was my last question.
Okay. I hope that was interesting.
That was so interesting.
Okay.
So interesting. And your work is stunning. I cannot wait to have an excuse to do another giant post about you.
Thanks.
And I'm so happy to, like, you know, get the inside scoop because, you know, I sort of knew a little bit, but really not a lot. And I'm kind of in awe of you.
Thank you. Yeah, I think my work now is kind of a little bit, like, abrupt and maybe kind of alien, or, like, there's no real entry point, but I feel like once I explain it to people, they understand where it's coming from.
Yeah, like, I'm so curious what my readers, like, because, you know, on first pass, you're like, whoa, what's going on here? And that's really why I wanted to do this interview, because, you know, obviously it's not just, hey, look, boobs, you know.
Right.
And so I really wanted, like, you know, I can just tell by, like, your artist statement and just even emailing with you that you're a very intelligent, very thoughtful artist. And this is such an important thing that's happening right now. And so I really wanted a chance to talk to you about it and for other people to hear about it and think about it for a minute and, you know, to see your work at the same time. So I'm so thrilled we got to do it.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Of course. And I'm so happy to know you now. And so let's stay in touch and tell me what happens with that gallery, because I really want to hear what's going on.
Yeah, I meet with them in 2 weeks. So.
Okay, I will send good thoughts.
Thank you. Okay, well, have a good day.
Okay, you too, and I'll talk to you soon.
Okay, bye.
Okay, bye.
Phew, I think that was the most serious discussion Art for Your Ear has ever heard, and I liked it. I really do believe Erin's work is one for the art history books. She has so beautifully captured a moment in time, a moment that some of us might look back on one day and cringe a little bit. I am so happy to have had the chance to talk to this very thoughtful, interesting, smart, and ridiculously talented woman. And let's face it, anyone that enjoys a good Grey's Anatomy cry is okay by me. Oh, and she neglected to mention that she has a show in Brooklyn right now. It's at Brilliant Champions Gallery, and it will be up until July 26. So if you can see it in person, you should. Thank you so much to Erin for sharing her very personal stories. Thanks to Saatchi Art for supporting this episode. And as always, big thanks to you for listening. A bunch of you have recently rated the podcast and left reviews on iTunes, and suddenly Art for Your Ear is much higher up on the What's Hot in Art list. So thank you so, so, so much for that. I really do appreciate it. Okay, so you know what's next. Yep, there will be more Art for Your Ear next weekend. See you then.